Welcome back, and thank you for joining into this week's 13th podcast, Automotive Repair Tips. My name is Frank R. Schaefer, and I appreciate you being here this week. I will share with you my knowledge and thoughts of over 44 years of problem-solving experience. Every other Wednesday, I will have a new podcast. If you should have a question, I strongly encourage you to please email me at franks71camaro@gmail.com. Once again, that's franks71camaro@gmail.com. This week, we will have more automotive repair tips and fun facts number two. What is your knowledge? These are in no specific order or categories for that matter. I'll just start off with the safety standards. On September 9th, 1966, President Lyndon B. Johnson signs the National Traffic and Motor Vehicle Safety Act requiring automobile manufacturers to install safety standards. Knowing this, in what year did the federal government begin to require lap and shoulder seat belts in the front outboard seats of all new passenger cars sold in the United States? It was 1968. What was the first state to pass a law requiring mandatory seat belts? It was New York. New York was the first state to pass a mandatory seatbelt law, followed by New Jersey. In New York, failure to wear a seatbelt brought a $50 fine, which was no small change in 1985. Where did the first statewide click it or ticket campaign take place, and in what year? It was North Carolina in 1993. Followed by South Carolina in 2000. The success was such that the program was implemented in 8 southeastern states in 2001, followed by 18 additional states across the country in 2002. So who invented Click It or Ticket? In 1993, Governor Jim Hunt launched the campaign in North Carolina in conjunction with the primary enforcement safety belt law, which allows law enforcement officers to issue a safety belt citation without observing another offense. Since then, other states have adopted this campaign. Now into brake calipers. How do you compress the pistons in most rear calipers? With a special rear caliper tool. Most rear calipers use a screw-style piston to activate the parking brake. This piston requires a delicate combination of clockwise rotation and inward pressure to compress it at the same time. The only way to effectively do this is with a special rear caliper tool. Many auto parts stores rent these tools to DIYers or do-it-yourselfers. Now, what I've noticed was sometimes the left rear would be different than the right rear. Sometimes you'd have to go the opposite direction, so be careful of that. In other words, the left rear, you may have to go to the left, and the right rear, you may have to go to the right. But that's not set in stone. That was just some certain vehicles, so be careful of that. Okay, now here's one. If you have a drift to the right, what should you check first? First is proper air pressure in the tires. Second, if the drift is still there, cross the front tires from left front to right front. Third, if the drift changes to the left, then the problem is with the tires. If the drift is still present, then check the front end for damage and complete this job with a proper alignment. In the mid-1990s and early 2000s, Chrysler was famous for hiding car batteries. Where? Inside the front wheel well. In its mid-sized sedans from the mid-1990s through the early 2000s, Chrysler saved room under the hood by putting the battery in the side wheel well. To access the battery, you had to turn the wheel to one side and peel back the wheel well cover. Those were interesting. What is the correct brake bleeding sequence? What is the correct brake bleeding sequence? The answer, every car is different. Each model's brake system is different, so their brake hoses routes in different ways. This means each model of vehicle will have a different brake bleeding procedure. You must do this in the right sequence or risk reintroducing air into the brake system, especially with ABS or anti-lock braking system. Okay, here's one. You've got a car throwing an EVAP leak code. What is the first thing you should check? You've got a car throwing an EVAP leak code. What is the first thing you should check? You check the fuel cap. An EVAP code means there is a vacuum leak in the evaporative emission system, and a fuel tank is part of this system. Oftentimes, drivers will refill their fuel tank and forget to tighten the cap, which may trigger a check engine light with an EVAP diagnostic code. This does not mean this code always points towards the fuel cap, but it's the best place to start. Okay, you have a car that is overheating and the upper radiator hose is significantly cooler than the lower hose. What's the likely issue? A failed thermostat. If the thermostat fails and does not let the coolant flow back into the radiator, the engine will overheat, but the upper radiator hose will remain dramatically cooler than the lower radiator hose, and no coolant will flow through it. A customer asks for a free diagnostic scan, and you turn up a random misfire code. What is the next step? The next step would be to request a per-hour diagnostic fee. A free diagnostic code reader is purely to give you an idea of where to start, and a random misfire code can lead you down several paths. The safest bet is to get a per-hour diagnostic approval so you can find the source of the problem and fix it right away. Some performance vehicles, particularly German ones, such as BMW, require this to perform in alignment. What is it? Specially weighted sandbags. Many performance cars, especially German ones, have their suspension tuned for carrying passengers and still delivering top-notch performance. This means an alignment technician must simulate the weight of a passenger and driver in the car. They do this using special sandbags. Here's a different one. What other components should you always replace when doing a timing belt? What other components should you always replace when doing a timing belt? Items driven by or contacting the belt, including the pulleys, water pump, and timing belt tensioner. The timing belt is one of the most sensitive and expensive belts in your vehicle. While replacing it, it is best practice to also replace all the timing belt pulleys, tensioners, and the water pump. This helps prevent other problems in the area from damaging the expensive repair you just did. Okay, and another note, is a tire plug a reliable repair method? Is a tire plug a reliable repair method? It is a temporary fix only. Plugs are great for quick on-the-road repairs, but they are not a permanent solution. The only permanent repair for a puncture wound in a tire is an internal patch bonded to the tire itself. What is an interference engine? Once again, what is an interference engine? This is when the valves are in the extended open position and in the way of the pistons that travel upwards, so the piston will bend the valves under usually high RPMs. or sometimes go through the piston itself, because the valves interfere with the piston's travel. So if your time belt breaks in an interference engine, chances are high that your valves will bend. I'm an optimist person. Food for thought, I seen a customer that was waiting in an outdoor bank line. Their engine suddenly stops. They have it towed into repair facilities. Someone in the shop found out that the engine was an interference engine. We thought the engine was shot. Took it apart. Lo and behold, the engine's valves were not bent. It must have been because of the low RPMs. So all engines won't have bent valves, but the majority will, especially with high RPMs. Okay, ASC. When did ASC begin? June 12th of 1972. ASE, or Automotive Service Excellence, highest recognition is the Blue Seal of Excellence, designation for auto repair centers and dealers that exhibit superior service and hire staff that are at least 75% ASE certified. These elite facilities are among the best in the nation and offer complete repair and maintenance care. Once again, ASC is short for National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence. Since 1972, our independent nonprofit organization has worked to improve the quality of vehicle repair and service by testing and certifying automotive professionals. A question that quite frequently comes up is, does an ASC certification matter? Does ASC certifications matter? Becoming accredited by ASC can help ensure that you're ready to work on today's cars, trucks, and SUVs. ASC certification is a special title given out by the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, or ASC, to qualifying technicians. So let's sum this question up. Let's say you have a new vehicle that needs work. What would you rather have, ASC technician work on your vehicle or random person off the streets? You decide. What is a technician called who is certified in all 8 ASC areas? What is a technician called who is certified in all 8 ASC areas? Technicians who pass all 8 tests are recognized as ASC certified master automobile technicians. So what are the 8 ASC certifications anyways? The 8 core areas of auto certifications are A1, engine repair, A2, automatic transmission and transaxle, A3, manual drivetrains and axles, A4, suspension and steering, A5, brakes, A6, electrical/electronic systems, A7, heating and air conditioning, and A8, engine performance. Here's a question you may have heard. Who was recognized for inventing the world's first automobile? Once again, who was recognized for inventing the world's first automobile? On January 29, 1886, Carl Benz applied for a patent for his vehicle powered by a gas engine. Carl Benz invented the three-wheeled motor car, known as the motor wagon. In 1866, it was the first true modern automobile, and that's why many name him the actual inventor. So is Carl Benz founder of Mercedes-Benz? Is Carl Benz founder of Mercedes-Benz? In 1926, the Benz Company, founded by German engineer Carl Benz, merged with his competitor, Daimler, to form Daimler-Benz, maker of Mercedes-Benz automobiles. Here's an acronym. What does the automobile acronym BMW stand for? Once again, what does the automobile acronym BMW stand for? Bavarian Motor Works. What type of material are car battery posts made of? It's made of lead. Both the positive and negative are made of lead. Now, how to properly boost a car battery with another vehicle, non-electric vehicles only. First of all, either pull the vehicle on the side of the dead car battery or in front of the dead car battery. Bumper to bumper should be about 1 foot away from each other. First, find the positive of the dead battery. It usually has a red protective plastic cover and has a positive sign in front of the lead post embossed right into the battery. Grab the cables, squeeze, and place the first red jumper end to the dead battery's positive terminal. Second, find the positive battery terminal of the good donor battery. Connect the other end of the red jumper cable to the good donor card battery positive terminal. Third, find the negative black terminal of the good donor battery. Squeeze the black handle of the jumper cables and place it onto the black negative battery post. And fourth, place the final black jumper cable lead to a steel, non-painted surface on the engine, someplace further away from the battery, at least 1 foot away from the battery. Okay, so why jump a car this way is one question I consistently get. Because car batteries discharge explosive hydrogen gases, so avoid smoking near them, number one. Also make sure the black grounding cable is not attached to the negative terminal of the dead battery, because the spark created when connecting the final jump handle can ignite these gases, creating a sulfuric acid explosion. One question I do get quite often is, can you jumpstart a frozen car battery? Once again, can you jumpstart a frozen car battery? First of all, avoid jumpstarting a frozen car battery. It may explode. If you can open the battery, look to see if the liquid inside of the battery is frozen. Also, if the battery sides are bulging, it is likely frozen. That fluid in the inside, sulfuric acid in water. The more water you add, the more likely that it's going to freeze on you. Okay, what's another way for a car battery can bulge? What's another way a car battery can bulge? Bulging or swelling usually happens when a battery is overcharged. When this happens, heat and hydrogen gas build up faster than the battery can allow them to dissipate, causing the outer casing to warp and or expand. What car battery terminal generally gets corroded? Yes, it is a trick question. What car battery terminal generally gets corroded? In many cases, it's believed that the corrosion will typically form around the negative terminal, which suggests that the battery is undercharging due to the lack of adequate driving time. Corrosion around the positive terminal is generally believed to be the result of overcharging from the alternator. Which leads me to the next question. If a battery is overcharging, what is most likely the cause? If a battery is overcharging, what is most likely the cause? It is usually a faulty voltage regulator and usually is built right into the alternator. Okay, while we're talking about electricity, what if your car heater blower motor only works on high and not medium or low? What could be the problem? Once again, what if your car heater blower motor only works on a high and not medium or low? What could be the problem? Chances are good the blower motor resistor is burnt out. Most car manufacturers today use a series of resistors to make the heater blower motor run at different speeds. And when one or more of these resistors burn out, you're usually left with only one heater blower motor speed, high. The resistor module is easy and inexpensive to replace, so try to do it yourself. Okay, this one here I see quite often, and I hear quite often. If you turn the right turn signal light on and it flashes a lot quicker than the left one, what is most likely the problem? Once again, if you turn the right turn signal light on and it flashes a lot quicker than the left turn signal would, what is most likely the problem? A bulb is burnt out on the side that flashes faster. More chances than none, that's what the problem is. Okay, how many volts should a fully charged automotive battery produce? Once again, how many volts should a fully charged automotive battery produce? 12.6 volts. Check the voltage of your battery using a DVOM or digital voltammeter to help determine your next course of action. 12.6 volts or above, your battery is healthy and fully charged. Okay, how many cells does a 12-volt battery have? Once again, how many cells does a 12-volt battery have? It has 6 cells at 2.1 volts per cell. Next, you have to remove a bolt with a half-inch head, but you only have metric sockets. 1 inch is equal or equivalent to 25.4 millimeters. Tell me what size socket which would most effectively remove the bolt. It would be 13 millimeter. When talking automotive electricity, what does the acronym DC stand for? Direct current. Okay, when talking automotive electricity, what are the main differences between a parallel circuit and a series circuit? Once again, when talking automotive electricity, what are the main differences between a parallel circuit and a series circuit? A parallel circuit has 2 paths for electricity to flow, while a series circuit only has 1 path of electricity to flow. Now for a classic ASE question. Technician A says a diode is used to control the direction of current flow. Technician B says diodes cannot be used to control voltage spike across an inductor. Who is correct? And I'll read that one more time. Technician A says a diode is used to control the direction of current flow. Technician B says diodes cannot be used to control voltage spike across an inductor. Who is correct? Is it Technician A, Technician B, both Technicians A and B, or neither Technician A nor B? The correct answer is Technician A. Diodes are one-way electrical check valves. Diodes are used for voltage suppression, isolation, and rectification. Okay, sincerely hope this episode has been helpful to you. Once again, I know you can be spending your time doing something else, so I would like to especially thank you for spending this time with me. You will hear a new episode in 2 weeks. This is Frank R. Schaefer signing off. Thank you once again. I appreciate it. Happy motoring.